Hey, this is Dr. Beter. Today is November 14, 1975, and this is my monthly audio letter number 6. As I speak to you today, the four Rockefeller brothers, David Nelson, John D. III, and Lawrence, operating as a unit, are nearing the goal line in their merciless drive to enslave America. Even so, as I discussed in my monthly audio letter number 2 for July 1975, they have been partially tripped up recently by unexpected obstacles, both here and abroad. Obstacles caused by your increasing awareness of what is going on. Their grip on the ball has been loosened a trifle, and they are beginning to lose their balance. They can be stopped. But this will only happen if each of us keeps doing our part, spreading the word by all possible means about what is happening. Otherwise, they still can and will reach their goal line of dictatorship. One thing we should always keep in mind is that you and I are not alone in this fight. There are many, many members of the United States Intelligence Service who do not agree with the horrendous perversion of their activities that is going on under the control of the Rockefeller brothers. So they give me information and I pass it on to you. I'm fighting on their behalf, among other things, especially for over 500 ex-CIA and ex-FBI officers and agents who are now dead on file, agents who were part of Operation Deep Freeze. Last month, I mentioned the electronic technique of psychological programming, which are now in use. Similar techniques are used on agents themselves in Operation Deep Freeze, enabling them to assume false identity so completely that they can even pass lie detector tests. They are programmed this way for an assignment and are supposed to be deprogrammed afterward, releasing their minds from this artificial state. But some of these agents have been double-crossed by the CIA and FBI for certain reasons, pronounced dead on file, and dumped out on the street without being deprogrammed. They are left without access to jobs, welfare, or in most cases even their families. Many of those in this situation are the very men who most want what is right for America, not for the international conquests of the Rockefellers, and therefore I'm fighting their fight as best I can. The three topics I want to discuss today parallel the three audio books that I have recorded so far for Audio Books Incorporated. In those, I've tried to give you essential background information. In my monthly audio letters, on the other hand, I'm trying to keep you continually informed of the latest plans and developments on a current events basis. My first audio book, released October 1974, warned of the coming depression and war. And today my topic number 1 is the Ford Depression, Asian War, and the impending doom of the OPEC nations. My second audio book, released March 1975, explained the Fort Knox gold scandal and its crucial role in destroying our economy and our republic. And today my topic number 2 is Fort Knox Plutonium and our sellout by Congress. My third audio book, released July 1975, tells you all about the new Constitution, which has already been written secretly for America's conversion into a dictatorship. And today, my topic number 3 is Gerald Ford's last days as president. Topic number 1. Last month in my audio letter number 5, I explained how the four Rockefeller brothers are preparing to sacrifice New York City as one way of triggering what will be called the Ford Depression. And on October 17, 1975, a dress rehearsal was held for the default of New York City. Sudden news bulletins the previous day said that New York City was on the brink of default, and for 24 hours, the TV and radio news was filled with dire speculations about what might happen. The cliffhanger ended with the default being avoided, only by a matter of minutes. And in the process, the financial term default was transformed into a household word, and a frightening one at that. For weeks, President Ford and his spokesman had been opposing any federal aid to prevent default, and so had Vice President Nelson Rockefeller. That is, until October 11, 1975, just a week before the near default in New York. On that date, October 11, Rockefeller suddenly launched a public campaign of speaking in favor of aid to New York, even while still working behind the scenes in Congress and the banking community to prevent it. Thus began the carefully orchestrated public split between Ford and Rockefeller, that is, to leave Ford holding the bag when our financial catastrophe arrives very shortly. 12 days later, on October 29, Ford crawled out still further on the limb that Rockefeller is sawing off by announcing that he would absolutely veto any kind of legislation Congress might send him to bail out New York City. And only 4 days after that, Rockefeller put further distance between himself and his lackey Ford by removing himself from the vice presidential ticket for next year. Many people are falling right into Nelson Rockefeller's trap as a result, discounting Rockefeller in their thinking and leaving Ford 100% in the spotlight. Because of considerations such as those I discussed last month, the effects of a default by New York City or state would not merely ripple through our economy. A tidal wave would be a better term. Even if the federal government or Federal Reserve does step in to apply financial band aid, the Rockefeller brothers, through their control of the Federal Reserve System as well as the government, have it within their own power either to intensify this process or to soften it. But as of now, they're preparing to pull out all the stops. Meanwhile, government economic spokesmen are lying when they say our economy is recovering. The United States dollar is sinking overseas, and our domestic economy is on the ropes, ready for a knockout punch from a New York default, stock market crash, or other such blow. A lot of attention is being paid especially to the effect a New York default would have on the nation's banks. Well, there are quite a few banks around the country that would be in trouble, but the big New York City banks owned by the Rockefellers are not among them. They hold vast amounts of New York City bonds, but that's in trust for other investors. The banks themselves do not own them. The Rockefellers, as I said before, bailed out months ago, and after the crash, they will be thoroughly liquid, ready to buy up everything in sight for a penny on the dollar. Of course, they could force one of their own banks to fail for the sake of appearances, but if they do, it will be strictly voluntary on their part. A more telling warning of the impact of default came from the Bank of America, the largest bank in the world, and also controlled by the Rockefellers. They reveal that over two-thirds of New York City bonds are held by individuals, not banks. The life savings of many people are therefore directly at stake. The economic calamity now brewing in the United States is, as I have explained before, to beat us into such a submissive condition that we will accept a dictatorship under the new Rockefeller Constitution a year from now. Already the building attack on the food stamp program is leading into something called the Federal Work Job Program. It will seem to offer food and benefits to those in need as the Depression deepens, but at the expense of signing away your present constitutional rights in the fine print. Its actual purpose is the conscription of people into slave labor, which may not be immediately apparent since no barbed wire compounds will be involved at first. But when the time comes, they are scheduled to be packed up and sent to the Middle East, to help reconstruct that area after the coming war, never to be heard from again. To get Americans to accept such schemes, the food shortages I have been warning about for over a year now are being engineered. One factor in this has to do with shutting off the flow of natural gas used to make fertilizer in California, which supplies up to 40% of some of the food supplies used in the United States. Another factor is the continuing shipments of grain to Soviet Russia on so-called sale terms, which are only 10% down, the rest guaranteed by you, the American taxpayer. Official estimates of the Soviet grain crop keep being revised downward as an excuse and cover for additional shipments, but no evidence of Soviet crop failures has ever been given to the United States Agriculture Department, and it never will be, because the alleged Soviet drought is fictitious. Instead, the Soviet Union is stockpiling for the coming Asian war. As it now stands, my friends, the war in Asia could come as much as 1 year earlier than was indicated by my information just a few short months ago. As of now, the Rockefeller brothers and their Soviet partners have set a target date of February 1976, just a few short months from now, for initiation of hostilities, which are planned to begin in the Middle East. Such a shift in timing is unnerving, but so far the information I have been able to give you has been more accurate than that which Secretary of State Henry Kissinger sometimes provides in confidential briefings of top businessmen. For example, in the early fall of last year, Kissinger briefed a group of about 100 American businessmen who do business in the Middle East and told them that by late spring of 1975, there would be war in the Middle East. The war he was talking about is the war that is now set to begin in February 1976. What Kissinger was really talking about was his diplomatic objectives. My own information, however, indicated that conditions would not be ripe yet for a Middle East war, at least through the summer of 1975. And that information turned out to be correct. But the war preparations are indeed moving quietly now, and very quickly. First, David Rockefeller must obtain an international monetary agreement on exchange rates at the January meeting of the International Monetary Fund, since a floating currency during wartime would be unmanageable. Meanwhile, in the diplomatic reign, Kissinger's Sinai Accord is the key feature. You may have been left with the impression by our kept press that the Sinai Accord is between Egypt and Israel, with 200 American technicians being sent there just as a sort of glue to make it stick. But, my friends, this is just not the case. It is, in reality, two separate treaties, one between the United States and Israel, the other between the United States and Egypt. They are executive agreements, in effect, being treaties, considered as being treaties. By ratifying these so-called treaties, comprising the Sinai Accord, the United States Congress has sold the American people right down the road to war. They have now set the stage for America to be involved in something we have not had for 30 years. A declared official war. The 200 American advisors, or technicians so-called, are already in the Sinai, as President Ford admitted in a slip of the tongue on Meet the Press, November 9, 1975. And they have two purposes. They are the vanguard of a secret American Lebanon nuclear strike force, and they are also to be the deliberate targets for a provocation that will be used to ignite the war. Now that we are officially at peace with Egypt by way of the Sinai Accord Treaty, we will have to officially breach that peace, that is, declare war, in order to retaliate against this rigged attack on the Americans. The anti-Zionism resolution, which has just been passed in the United Nations, is also part of this plan. The Arabs have fallen into a terrible trap by pushing through this resolution, which will be used to whip up fears that Israel is being surrounded and will be snuffed out if America does not respond militarily to the provocative actions mentioned a moment ago. The fighting between Muslims and Christians in Lebanon has been fomented by Libya, which is controlled by the Rockefellers for two reasons. For one thing, the excitement there distracts attention away from the true, larger picture of war preparations in the Middle East. But even more importantly, the fighting in Lebanon has given the Rockefellers the excuse they wanted for pulling their own companies out of that area prior to the coming war. As of now, all the big U.S. multinational corporations formerly based in Lebanon have pulled up stakes and headed for London, out of the war zone. The American foreign policy known as détente with Soviet Russia has, in reality, hardened into an alliance, in spite of recent remarks by Secretary of State Kissinger, for domestic consumption. While the United States bargains away its defense capabilities at the so-called SALT talks and receives nothing in return, Russia goes right on doubling and redoubling their military buildup with Kissinger and the Presidents Ford and Rockefeller consent. Meanwhile, the United States is being turned into a factory to supply the Soviet Union. The Rockefeller brothers think that they and the USSR will thus end up as partners ruling the world. But the horrible risk, my friends, is that they are taking is that after the coming Asian war is out of the way, Russia will double cross the Rockefeller brothers and take over the whole world for itself. Secretary of Defense James Schlesinger was fired by Nelson Rockefeller through his puppet president Gerald Ford because he was getting in the way of this alliance. Schlesinger insisted, very properly, that true détente must be balanced with a strong defense, and he refused to knuckle under. So he had to go. But as he went, he said some words that should be burned indelibly into the mind of every American, and I want to quote here. Some years from now, someone will raise the question, why weren't we warned? And I wanted to be able to say, indeed you were, unquote. The Red Chinese can see what is developing. That is why they accorded Secretary of State Henry Kissinger such a frosty treatment during his recent visit. Red China is being encircled by the Soviet Union with the help of the Rockefellers through their manipulation of the wealth of the United States. Indochina has been delivered into Soviet hands in return for turning over the rich offshore oil leases of North Vietnam to the Rockefellers. The coming war is intended to suck up India, Red China, and all of Africa into complete domination by the Rockefeller-Soviet alliance. In the process, it is also to slap down Europe and Japan, which are trying to squirm free of the Rockefeller bonds that already grip them. Here now is the grand strategy for the war, which I can reveal to you for the very first time. And as always, I reveal it in the hope that doing so will throw a monkey wrench into these plans and cause them to fail. World War II was used by the Rockefellers to bring Britain down to her knees, as explained in my first audio book last year, and also to make great inroads into Western Europe. Since World War II, Britain has been generally subservient to the Rockefellers, but lately both Europe and Japan, which has been the special domain of John D. Rockefeller III since the war, are showing signs of struggling to break free. However, 99% of Japan's oil needs are supplied by the Middle Eastern Arab members of OPEC, and 67% of the oil needs of the European economic community come from there also. On top of that, India, one of the prime targets of conquest in the planned war, is also heavily dependent upon OPEC oil. And Africa, another target, leans heavily upon Europe for all kinds of support and will be easy picking if Europe is neutralized. The OPEC nations of the Middle East, therefore, hold many of the keys for accomplishment of the Rockefeller-Soviet joint objectives in the Asian war. Plans now exist for the Americans in the Sinai to be attacked and for over 100 of them to be killed, enraging Congress and public opinion in the United States. On top of that, the drumbeat which has begun with the United Nations anti-Zionism resolution will by then make it appear that Israel is in danger of extinction. War will thus be declared by then-President Rockefeller's rubber-stamp Congress. Cobra helicopter gunships have already been delivered secretly to the Sinai, and these will be equipped with air-to-ground tactical atomic missiles, which have been in the Sinai secretly for 2 years under strict American control. After hostilities break out, this limited nuclear strike force is to put the OPEC oil wells out of action with atomic blasts. No nation in the Middle East, including Israel and Lebanon, will escape radioactive fallout from this limited nuclear strike. And the oil wells themselves, due to radiation, will remain unusable and capped off for a period of approximately 10 years. The United States, which currently gets about 19% of its oil from the Middle East, will experience manipulated shortages far worse than those during the Arab oil embargo 2 years ago. And this will help further rip our domestic economy to shreds. But the effect on Europe and Japan will be far more drastic. At one stroke, the heart of Europe will be crippled and completely at the mercy of the merciless Rockefeller brothers. And Japan, which is being rudely rebuffed by the Soviet Union and wooed by China these days, will be thrown fully into the arms of China. China has begun developing its own vast oil deposits and could provide some to Japan in return for an alliance against China's mortal enemy, the Soviet Union. Thus will the Sino-Japanese alliance be cemented. The already bitter clashes between China and Russia on the one hand, plus lesser skirmishes between China and Russia's client state, India, on the other hand, will set the stage for the larger Asian war, which is planned to follow very quickly. Africa, cut off from its ties to Europe, will be like a ripe plum, ready for the plucking by the Rockefellers, and this includes Rhodesia and South Africa. I turn now to topic number 2. The French have a saying that the more things change, the more they remain the same. How true that is, and how tragic. It's been over a year and a half now since I first exposed the Fort Knox gold scandal during congressional testimony. Long ago, I offered publicly to go to jail as a rabble-rouser if I could not prove my charges in an appropriate legal forum. But has Congress acted? No. And now, the gold manipulations have entered a new phase. Gold, my friends, is now coming back into the United States, along with huge amounts of illegal drugs, in return for American-made guns and weapons, which are being sent abroad for use in wars, revolutions, and terrorism. The gold now coming in is not reflected in Treasury records. Instead, it is being hidden around the country by the CIA for the Rockefellers. The Rockefeller interests want to have it handy for sale to the government for war purposes or for other purposes at the elevated prices that will soon prevail. Meanwhile, as I revealed last month, the Fort Knox gold story has taken a deadly new turn. And as before, Congress is doing absolutely nothing about it. The Central Core Vault of the bullion depository at Fort Knox contains canisters of liquid radioactive superpoison processed from plutonium-239, the deadliest substance imaginable. These canisters are leaking due to corrosion, and the radioactive leakage is escaping through the porous concrete walls of the vault and through the dehumidifying system and getting out into the countryside to be carried away on the winds, contrary to what officials tell you. The prevailing winds in that area for the past several years have been very unusual, from essentially due west rather than from the northwest, as is more common. As a result, the thin, invisible fog of radioactive poison from Fort Knox is being carried from the depository, which is located south of Louisville, eastward in the general direction of Lexington in West Virginia, and onward approximately toward Washington, D.C. And this leakage has already been going on for several years, in sufficient quantity to be having an initial impact on health statistics now.